in to another wine pod coming to you. Hey, let me get this out of the way. Let me get this read out of the way here. Coming to you live from the AOI studios, aka my basement office. I love it in this office. And when I was making my office into a pod room, I had a vision of what I wanted, and AOI made it come true. The desk, the design of it, the chairs, it all looks great. I love this room. And the big reason why, AOI, okay? They made my ideas a reality, and they can do that for you. Check out AOI on the web, AOIcorp.com. Give them a call, 402-896-5520. Bo Rude is in the house. Wine pod. You've gotten a head start on me here. I had wine discipline, unlike someone I know. You're usually the more disciplined human, but I've been more disciplined than you.
Very true, but we had a nice little hour conversation before the pod started.
We have a pre-pod every time. Like, we should record our pre-conversations, and then we wouldn't have to do the pod, because we've literally been down here for an hour already talking.
Oh, I know. And my wife wanted me to come home soon.
Sorry,
I'm going to be late. Who cares? So, but I was chugging my wine.
Yes.
And the bottle's almost gone. And
Jesus,
Nick was.
You haven't taken this down, Doug.
And you hadn't touched it. So I finally said, like, before we started here, I said, you got
to
take a drink.
I kind of wanted to get saucy during the pod, though. So I just picked this wine out. I had some wine in LA that I loved. I'm like, what wine is this? You know what it is? It's the greatest wine I've ever had in my life. I'm easily fall in love with wines. But this, so that wine's en route. I'm shipping it to my house.
Would you say you're easily sold to?
Very.
If somebody's enthusiastic about something, you're buying.
It doesn't take much to get me.
Anything. It's like, can I show you something? The best in the world. You know, it's like.
That's the best. This is the best stuff right here. But I just went to Hy-Vee and chose a wine. Ghost Pines. I just thought of Patrick Swayze. I've never seen Ghost. Is it good?
Yes, we're very good. Yeah.
Like, what's happening in the scene where they're doing pottery? Like,
so he's not a ghost when they're doing the pottery.
That's for real.
To me, she's sculpting. Swayze comes in and he wants to get on that sculpture. So he starts, you know, they start getting those. The clay is spinning and they get the hands wet.
And then do they end up doing it?
I'm pretty sure they did. Hey, when you're spinning clay,
you don't spin clay. But the problem is spinning clay, like, and then if you're actually gonna like take it to like getting intimate, you got clay hands.
Oh, I mean,
I don't want to be touched with clay hands.
You know what happens? It hardens up, and
wake up the next morning, like clay everywhere.
You're like a gargoyle down there.
Alternate cutout scene of Ghost is Swayze waking up the next morning like
a gargoyle.
He's frozen. He's like, he's just stiff.
His undies are concrete. Just
concrete. No one thought that scene through at all. I don't know. Who thought of like, why would pottery be like a sensual thing?
I think because you're using your hands.
And it's kind of gooey.
That's what I'm saying.
It's got some gooiness.
You're getting.
Did you take? I took pottery at Southeast. Did you?
I don't think I did.
I've been on the pottery wheel, boy.
You liked it?
I mean, I was horrific at it. Because it's got a pedal. You know, so you got to ease.
Arts, Nick, it's arts and crafts. You're a weakness in life. You are historically bad with arts and crafts.
I made a dolphin for my high school girlfriend at the time because she liked dolphins. And this dolphin was just like atrocious looking. But I made a pottery, like you get on the wheel. The wheel is hard to, because you got to control the speed. And before you know it, it's just like, and it's like things are going everywhere. It's horrible. But yeah, so when I saw Ghost at a Simmons, I was like, Swayze. Bo likes Swayze.
Do I like
that's
Swayze?
That's how dumb people are with
would
wine.
Would you say I like Swayze? I don't know that I do, but I guess I watch I like Roadhouse.
I've never seen Roadhouse.
Well,
okay, here's a question for you. Because this pod, by the way, is just going to be like, I wrote down like 8-9 questions that I'm going to throw it out there. Bo's going to give his thoughts. I'm going to give my thoughts, and that's it. And I bet you don't have one, because I know I have a whole bunch. The movie you're most embarrassed you haven't seen. You probably don't have one, because you are I'm not sure I know anyone that's as well, like.
I mean this. If it's not a movie that's like one of these Oscar movies that's been out.
I'm talking like historical, you know, like.
I don't know that there's a historical movie that
The Avengers Endgame, you're like, okay.
No, there's not one that I would say I'm like, I really should have seen that. Like, I've seen The ones I've really wanted to see, I've seen.
I haven't seen The Godfather.
See, that's bad. That's one you should be ashamed of.
I mean, is it just a line of this?
Nick, no! Nick, no, not this. See, Nick, but see, this is funny because this is very you right now.
I'll take a cheese runza.
Take a cheese runza. Man.
I'll take a hot dog. No?
So, I mean, is, I come to you. I come to you for a cheese runza.
See, I don't understand someone that put a horse in a bed, a horse's head.
The horse's head. So the guy, Johnny Fontaine, he would have been a huge star. Okay, so Johnny Fontaine's the star.
Okay.
He goes to the Godfather because they won't put him in the movie because this Johnny Fontaine steals the producer's girl.
It's probably a bad move.
So they said, hey, would you please do this? This is for Don Corleone out of New York.
Yeah.
And he says, get out of here, you guineas. And you know, he goes. And so then the next day he had this like marvelous racehorse out in the stables. The next day the guy wakes up. He wakes up and the horse's head's in his. And so Johnny got the part. So that's an example of what the Godfather did to like get, you know, to get things done.
Ah, I never understood this thing. I'm like a horse's head. And
Nick, it's one of those.
Is it really that good?
That every single scene is perfect.
Really?
It's literally perfect.
Are there three Godfathers or just two?
There's three. I've never seen the third, and you don't need it. You need to see one and two. Nick, I will watch them with you sometime.
Okay. Are they long?
Yes.
Okay.
But Nick.
But that's me, the number one movie I'm like, when people, like, the amount of Godfather conversations I've faked my way through.
Yeah,
it's like the Godfather. I'm like, yeah, a horse's head.
Don't put the horse's head in there, huh?
Right? Make him an offer. He cannot refuse. You guys seen The Mask by Jim Carrey?
Hilarious. No, but seriously, we'll watch that sometime, and
Should we do a recap of the recapables?
A rewatchable?
Yeah. Are we gonna do the rewatchable Godfather for Nick and Bo?
Is there like a Italian American Day
There should be in there on that day to honor it. We'll watch The Godfather.
We'll watch a little.
So literally, well, I also have this wine app. I've shown you it, the Vivino app. This one scored pretty well. I was like, okay, go Swayze, puts up a good score. You're coming home with me. Well, that's the extent. It's kind of good. Cheers, buddy.
To Swayze and the Godfather. Let's get this thing rolling.
Gargoyle mornings. And another gargoyle morning.
When you have a long night on the pottery wheel and you wake up like a gargoyle. It's a heck of a day.
Come on, ridiculous. Okay, we got a bunch of ridiculous questions we're gonna dive into. I was so mad. I wanted to be disciplined and go to bed early last night because we're taping this on a Sunday night. I was on the call today for Creighton Butler on Fox. I didn't want to be up super duper late, but all the homies, including my top homie, you guys all got together and watched Fury Wilder. And it's pretty rare that like there's an event in sports where it's like, I really was like, God dang it. I want to watch that.
So to me, you know, watching the first
Did you watch the first one?
I did. I watched the first Fury Wilder and it was a good boxing match, right? It was very entertaining. But this is the rematch to me was the first heavyweight boxing match in the last 20 years since Lewis Tyson, which I think was Lennox Lewis Tyson, was maybe early 2000s, 2001. So it's been 20 years basically since we've had a heavyweight fight that I was like, I want to see that heavyweight fight. And that was the one. And it did not disappoint. I mean,
it went seven rounds.
It did, but it was so entertaining. It was an extremely entertaining
fight. Those guys are enormous human beings.
6'9 and 6'7.
I mean,
and Nick, they came out, the spectacle that they put on.
I saw what they looked like.
It was WWF. It was not like the Gypsy King came out being carried in a giant, and he stood up and was just like blowing kisses. And Wilder comes out in this like robotic.
He looked like Shredder. Remember Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles? Look like Shredder.
It was something between what Shredder and Beyonce would wear.
Beyonce.
And then it took 30 minutes to get in the ring for both of them. And then they start fighting, and it's a good fight. And then Fury
pops him on like the ear.
Like breaks his eardrum or something. And nobody thought that Fury was going to knock Wilder down, let alone knock him out pretty much. So he knocks him down and you see it in Wilder's face. Like, oh crap. Yeah. Like, I am hurt. And he couldn't, you know, he was.
His balance. Everybody talked about his balance was terrible.
I think your equilibrium gets off. And so I think everybody was stunned to see Wilder hurt and vulnerable. And then all of a sudden, Fury's leaning on him and roughing him up and beating him up. And so it was so entertaining. And you had to respect Wilder. He wasn't going to quit. He was so hurt. And he was just standing there.
So were you, give me your, because in the moment, were you guys thinking his corner's going to stop the fight? Like, did you think they should have?
Two rounds before, somebody there said, somebody needs to stop this fight. And then two rounds later, he backed into the corner and he was taking one-twos, and then you saw like the ref stop it, and then they showed in the replay like the towel was thrown in. So, I mean, it was the right move because he for two or three rounds shouldn't have been fighting pretty much. But it wasn't terrible, but it was the right move by the corner.
It still goes to show you that, like, I mean, again, the thing that's amazing to say out loud is 50, 60 years ago, the three biggest sports in the world were horse racing, baseball, and boxing.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the three biggest. And now they're like super, those three are like super niche
very
sports now. But I don't ever see horse racing ascending back to, you know, horse racing is good for like the one Kentucky Derby, you know, and everybody gets excited about that. Baseball, you know, it kind of has its place. It's not the king anymore. But boxing's the one, like, you, there still is nothing quite like, especially a heavyweight, big time boxing match. Nothing like it.
I'm sure live that was electric. Because it was electric in the room. We were all going crazy.
Because I'm not so sure. I always think about, like, the older I get, the more you kind of, like, get introspect. Like, you think back on, like, past sporting events. Because the older you get, the more you appreciate certain things. Like, I wish I would have been old enough to, been able to watch Ali in his prime, even Tyson in his prime. We were too young for that. Although I do remember watching when he bit Holyfield's ear. We were watching that together.
Yeah.
But there, just the electricity of a heavyweight, big time boxing event, nothing like it.
So these guys are making gobs of money with these pay per views. Gobs. I think they were each $25 million apiece before they got their pay per view cut. So the boxers don't want to go away from this. I think boxing, to stay alive, if they came back to, you know, go, you know, fighting on NBC like they used to, like where everybody gets to watch. So instead of, like, I don't know how many people watch 20 million or something probably in pay-per-view. That's just probably not even right. Maybe 10 million. But like, imagine if 50 million people are watching that. All of a sudden, you're a part of something bigger.
Right. That's what's hard about boxing with that. But so, because one of the coolest sporting events I've been to was, I went to the Bud Crawford fight at Pinnacle Bank Arena.
Yeah.
Shit, dude. It was rocking in there.
That's what people said.
I mean, it was rocking in there. There's just still, like, for as much as we have evolved into elite species, we're still like cavemen. Like, the most pure form of entertainment is like, you fight him.
That will never go away. I don't care.
People like people.
I don't care
fighting.
What happens in like the year 3000. We're all like gliding around on hoverboards in silver spacesuits.
Yes.
It's like, we better have a fight somewhere.
Because people
want to see fighting.
Because at the end of the day, still one of the biggest reasons why football is king is the physical nature of it. Like, we as people just love watching that.
It's the greatest entertainment.
It's why you're at any bar or any party, when you hear fight, you run to it, right?
Fuck.
But if someone's like, ping pong, you're not running. You're like, ping, whatever. I mean, you want to go see the fight.
It's primal, man.
And I'm so glad, and this is just like, you know, stupid, but so obviously you knew, because I would send you videos of me post my workout for 6-8 months. I did a workout 9 round was what it was called. So you see the various locations all over Omaha and Lincoln. And, you know, it's boxing and kickboxing. And it's like, I'd never done anything like that. But I've always said I've wanted to train for a fight that's never going to happen. But just even doing that, and I'm in there with like housewives, they're like, you can tell they're like, I hate my husband. And just, you know, just
why wouldn't he notice me?
Oh, God. Like, working late again. Like, I just feel like it's me. Literally, it was me and a bunch of like, you know, middle-aged women. And I felt like basically when they were punching their husbands' faces. Where I was in there like thinking I was, you know, I'm big on like moving around. You know,
Nick, no, I don't believe that, Nick. I don't believe that at all.
I got swag when I'm moving. But when it comes time to throw, your boy ain't going to throw. But I can move with the best. But what I'm saying is like I gained a level of, you ever really fucking like tried to 3 minutes, like throw punches, throw combinations.
I couldn't do three.
It's unbelievable.
If we try to do a minute. So at the gym we go to, so Mullen's got the gloves. We try to do, we hit the heavy bag and we try to do like a couple rounds of like a minute on.
You're dead.
A minute of going at it. We go lay in the ground. You're exhausted.
I mean, what was cool about it is you'd get, you know, one of the rounds, maybe like the instructor would be like, hey, we're going to do, you know, jab, cross, slip, jab, hook, you know, you got to remember these combinations, and it's like, it's hard, man. I'm just saying, I've gained a level, just even doing my little tiny thing that's not really boxing, but it's like you're at least like throwing, like I just have gained, I was already had the utmost respect for boxing, have like a 10,000% more respect.
And there's another level of respect I give to these guys, like Wilder, who lost the fight, right? He got his eardrum ruptured, smacked in the head. He probably like almost couldn't stand up, but then he was doing that for 3 more rounds.
Right.
Unwilling to just do what everything in his body and mind's telling him, which is, you need to quit. This is not where you need to be.
Right.
Everything inside of him said
fight
that.
Fight or flight is like, dude, flight.
You are running.
Get out of there.
And he has trained himself and has the fortitude to say, I'm going to stand in with this 6'9", 275-pound monster.
I mean.
And I'm going to just keep going. Like, that's where, like, even the guys that lose, I have respect for the guys that they wanted no part of that, and they kept doing it.
I have so much respect. I mean, and obviously, like, my brother-in-law, Ryan Jensen, 9-time UFC veteran, like, I just have so much respect for those dudes. Like, to step in the octagon, the ring, like, you're tough as shit.
Man. Oh, God.
Okay, topic number one, cross it off the list. I'm going to take a drink of my wine, Doc. It's good stuff. Okay, I brought this up because you kind of came with this. We got to give some Nebraska football talk. So give me a post-spring game bold prediction. So spring game is going to be April 18th. So we're like a month and a half. We're about 2 months.
Yeah, it's
so not that far away. Give me your, because I had to think about this for a little bit. But give me your. Do you have a post spring game prediction?
Yeah, and so I've been thinking about this for the last 2 months, watching sort of the coverage of Nebraska. The hype right now it's at an all time low. It's very low, and it's rightfully low, and it's. Where it should be, until we start winning, hype should remain low.
Right.
And
earn your hype.
The last 2 years, we've fallen prey to this. We overhype things, and then we get let down. And it's almost a negative effect on the team. The expectations get too high. So I think we are rightfully in this area of like, we expectations are low, and they should be, and we're going to keep them there. And everybody's like, yes, let's keep them low. It's going to be a tough year. Let's not... Everybody in Nebraska seems to be saying this. Everybody covering Nebraska seems to be saying this. But I have this sense, as soon as the spring game happens and we see some of these guys, some of these new guys, it's going to flip again. It's going to flip.
The people are going to be back on board with the hype train.
The hype train.
We're going to win the West. Hey, we're going to win the West.
We're going to win the West. We're going to win 10 games. This might, you know what? I think we've turned the, you know, we haven't done the stuff yet and we shouldn't do this, but it will. My prediction is the hype train will flip again and people are going to get way over their skis.
I think, to your point, there was a story from, I think, Bill Connolly, who's like, does his like analytical projections and everything. Like that was met with, like, honestly, for most Husker fans, that was like basically, so his analytics like projected Nebraska to be like pretty good.
And people, and Nick, you know what everybody started doing?
Everybody's like, no.
But
like,
inside, what happened? They went, oh my, look at it. We are. Look at that. We are, I guess we do have all the returning starters and receivers back with, and the percentage of total yards on
percentage
offense.
Of returning production. And then Wendell
Robinson.
Oh,
my God.
They
started doing the math in their head. They go, yeah, that's pretty good.
Because it's easy to be reluctant to the hype now, but, like, it's also because they're not in front of your face.
Yeah.
So to your point of, like, even as something as stupid as a spring game, from the standpoint of like you're just watching a practice, sometimes you just got to see Wandale back out there, and be like, oh yeah, he's the best player in the country. And people go nuts.
Wandale back, Mills looking good.
Omar Manning makes a couple of he makes one 40-yard go route, and people are just gonna be like, up the pottery.
Any of these freshmen or JUCOs contribute? Any if the quarterback, like if Martinez looks good, or him and McCaffrey look really good, then it's just going to add to it. It's in our nature as Nebraska fans, is what I'm realizing, to feed the hype.
I wrote this down, but I didn't really believe it, but I felt like I had to, like, ESPN first take, like, take a side. So I'm just going to ask you, where do you think people are going to be at with Adrian Martinez after the spring game? Do you think people are going to be back on board with him? Do you think people are going to be, the sentiment on him is going to stay arms crossed, we'll see what happens? Are people going to be more pro McCaffrey? Like, what do you think, if you had to look into your crystal ball and do a future Steve Sipple column, Applebee's and Adrian Martinez, a winning combination, what do you think?
I think it's in our nature to rally as a fan base.
That was where I would lean.
And they would rally. They're going to rally back around. I mean, they've kind of given Martinez the stiff arm. But if he wins the job, which my guess is he will, they're going to want to be on board with that, I think. But right now, they would love to see McCaffrey win the job, because I think McCaffrey's got sort of, he has the hearts and minds right now. But the reality
is, he's got the phone sex thing going, like we talked about. There's a reason phone sex works, because you fill in that unknown void with best case scenario.
It is.
The reason Luke McCaffrey has Husker Nation, like, it is, they've only seen him throw like 10 passes, but they're like, I got to assume if he threw 500 more of those, they would be, 80%.
Percentages are showing 80.
But that, like, so that's where Husker fans are at. But this is where I do think it's huge that spring practices aren't open to the media,
mm-hmm.
because of, like, all this would just get fuel the whole, hey, McCaffrey did this, hey, Adrian did this, you don't need that. And I do think it's going to be one of the number one things I'm most interested to see with spring football, outside of, like, the obvious tangible things that happen with the team, is, like, I'll be curious what just the mantra is from Frost and the staff on, like, how they're answering quarterback questions. Because, every time Mario Verduzco and Matt Lubick and Scott Frost talk to the media, there's going to be, even Barrett and Chenander, they're going to be like, hey, what did you see from the quarterback position? I'll be curious to see how they're answering those questions. Because whether you like it or not, in a market like this and with a fan base like this, how you answer those questions matter. Yeah. Because a huge part of why the hype train went off the rails with Martinez is because Frost and those guys, like, made a ton of glowing remarks about this dude with practice. And I'll be interested, because, like, you don't want to, like, mm-hmm. you don't want to overhype the guy, because I think that will get met with cynicism, but you also don't want to, like, say he's not doing anything, because then now we'll get met with, see, he's not doing anything.
And people lose confidence, and it's weird how that affects that position almost.
Yes.
Like when the fan base loses their confidence in you, it almost can like transfer into like tangible effects almost.
No question.
Which is weird, but it's kind of true.
Oh, I think it's not kind of true. It's
true. You want to keep the fan base on the side of Martinez.
I just think that'll be really interesting how that is packaged.
I think you got to
if Frost say, yeah, came into the pod room and said, Nick, I'm being serious. If you could, like, give me one spring game thought on, like, you were in the media. Like, what do you have any advice? I would be like, just, you need to be, like, be mindful with how you're speaking about the quarterbacks. I don't know if you need to go full scale Belichick mode of just like, you know, Luke did some good things and I thought Adrian did some good things today and I thought they both.
I think initially you might have to be very much like that with, it's an open competition, the best player is going to play.
Right.
Like, you got to make that clear. But then if he's going to be your guy, you better tie a bow on it and say, Adrian's really, you know, you so better start. If he solidifies himself, you better build him back up almost.
That's what I'm saying. So, like, I just wonder how that's going to get handled.
But people are going to want to see an open competition. I think that's part of you.
I think people
want to
see an open competition.
I think the coaches will even want to see an open competition.
Right. And I just wonder how that's going to get, like, packaged, if you will.
Yeah, it's weird. That's kind of a weird, it's a different thought.
I know. In the, like, this is kind of the classic thing that only is an issue, like, when you're at a place like Nebraska, mm-hmm, or Ohio State or wherever, you know, like, you're in the fishbowl and, like, literally every quote gets, like, brought into a conveyor belt and slid under microscopes and people are, like, looking at every, that is, like, that's
that might be the definition of the fishbowl, is like it magnifies.
That I'm dead serious. Like, I would tell Scott Frost, be careful what you say to the media about the quarterback position, because one thing that's kind of bullshit is, like, we've proven that, like, what you say will be held against
it's
you.
It's the Miranda rights
really
of
is.
Nebraska football.
Yes. You have the right to remain silent. Anything you say can and will be used against you.
And it will be brought up later if you mess up.
That's it.
In some situations.
So don't pump up someone if they're not, like, you know what I mean? Like, you just got to be careful with that.
It's even like Frost, like, his opening remarks, like, you know, people are going to have to adjust. Like, you know, that the newspapers are throwing it back in his face now.
Yes.
Because that's what we do here. We throw it back in your face if you say something.
So I don't know. Because my guess is one of the things that Frost has learned over the first 2 years is, like, is what we're talking about of, yeah, like, oh, okay, I can't, you know. The innocent comment that in all reality doesn't matter. You know, the whole thing of, like, even the whole, the hope the Big Ten's going to adjust to us. Everybody just stop for a second. Does that really matter?
No, it doesn't.
Does it really matter?
It's a great opening statement. It got people excited.
Because I also think Colin Cowherd talks about this. Like, understand the room. You're in a room. You're full of people that are in love with that you're here. There's former players here. Coach Osborne's over there. Understand the room.
It's a feel-good session. I mean, it's great.
Like, so
don't I
some people latch on that. It's like, it's things like that. It's like,
eh. I love that. That was great.
I mean, it's fine. But with all that said, like, you do, I just think what we're saying, but it doesn't make what we're saying not true.
Yeah.
Like, from the standpoint of, it does matter. Okay. We'll cross that one off the list. I wanted to ask you about this real quick, because it sounds like this is not a matter of if, it's when. This pretty massive piece of legislation gets passed with the NCAA that I think it was first birthed by the Big Ten Conference pushing for this. Of right now, for college football and for college basketball, if you transfer
and you're not a graduate,
and you're not a graduate transfer, you have to sit out a year. I transferred, I just sit out a year. They're pushing towards now, because, you know, the transfer portal is getting crazy. It is like a crazy thing. There is a big push for every single student athlete, as long as you're tracking and trending in the right direction academically, for you to have basically one free transfer. You can transfer once and not have to sit out. I mean, this is tough because it's coming from a person that transferred, and would I have loved to have been eligible right away? Sure. But I think, and I've talked about this also about this on my pod before, but I wanted to get your thoughts on this. I think this is like a, oh, God, this is like a potential. You may disagree with me. I'm not so sure this wouldn't rock the landscape of college athletics just as much or more than people being make money off name, image, and likeness.
Well, I mean, you see how bad it is in college basketball anyway with transfers. Like, now if they can transfer without sitting out,
it's going to be free agency every year.
Every single year. Think about as a coach in recruiting. Like, you recruit these guys and you spend so much of your time in life to get these guys there. And hopefully when they are there, you can be like, all right, now just you're in our system. But now you have to, like, you almost have to recruit them every year or something.
I mean, the days of player development and waiting your turn, for lack of a better term, like, those days would be gone. And even I was thinking about, like, someone like the people that are role players on successful teams. This is more of a basketball thing. Creighton's got a handful, you know, Creighton's got three really good guards. And then they have like a handful of role players. Who's to say another program wouldn't come to one of Creighton's role players and be like, you can come be a star on our team right away?
It just opens up a weird door.
I just...
Or, you know, I always say it's when you don't have to wait a year, people go for low-hanging fruit, which is like...
instant gratification.
Well, I'd love to win a championship. I know I've put in 4 years here and I'm... But I'll just really quick go try to win a championship with Clemson or Alabama next year. I mean, like, little things like that, you just go, I don't know that I like that. I don't know that I like that you even...
Honestly, and I mean this in all sincerity, and I don't know, if Ohio State came to Wandale Robinson and said,
you're the missing piece and we win a national title next year,
you can come play with da-da-da-da-da.
I just don't like that. I like that waiting period because it's like the, how bad do you really want to go get out of there?
That's why I'm telling, I mean, as someone that, I've talked about this, when I was sitting in the Jayhawk Towers in the 2004-2005 season, and the thought of transferring was popping into my head, one of the biggest deterrents was like, fuck, I got to sit out a whole year.
One whole year of not playing.
I've already basically not played for 2 years. Now I have to go sit out a whole year.
That's tough.
So, and again, it, to me, it sounds like it's not a matter of if, it's when.
Yeah.
It's going to happen.
We'll see. I mean, the whole, you know, the grad transfer thing has been so big the last few years. And, I mean, you look at the last four Heisman Trophy winners. Burrow, Kyler Murray, Baker, and then who was before that?
Was it Johnny?
Johnny Manziel. No, he was a couple years before that. Because he was a freshman when he won, wasn't he? But three of the last four, at least, yeah, that I can even remember. Oh, because Lamar won for that.
That's Lamar.
Right. But three of the last four have been grad transfers.
I'm not as up in arms in the grad transfer thing.
I'm not either. I'm just saying, though, you're seeing the landscape of movement.
That's what I'm saying.
Like it's an amazing amount of movement for key players. Guys that have won.
Right.
Heisman Trophy winners are transfers the year before.
Right.
And now you're going to give people... You're going to open the door in this area. It's like, it's everything's changing. And like, I don't know, maybe this sounds like old people talk, but like, change is scary. If you like what you have,
see, that's
it's like
thing that's,
change isn't always necessarily good.
I know. That's where with the push for name, image, and likeness that is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And then this one-time free transfer, it's like, what on earth does college football and college basketball look like in 5 years?
I don't know.
Because the one thing I never, like, is college football and college basketball perfect? No, it's not. Could it be better? Sure. But just because something isn't perfect and could be better doesn't mean it's not good.
Yeah.
It's still really good. And I just get worried. I'm not one of those guys that's totally anti-players getting paid or necessarily pro getting guys getting paid or anti this one-time transfer, pro this one-time. Like, I see both sides of the argument. I just get worried about, like, too radical of changes to the point where all of a sudden the sport changes to the point where it's like almost you don't know what you're looking at now. So I don't know. I just wanted to get your
that one's tight. I don't on that. That one scares me more than anything.
I feel like every coach that I've brought it up, I'll make it a point to every college coach. I'm like, hey, what do you think of this? And every one of them gives me that look like,
Because, Nick, they recruit. And recruiting, what you find out with college sports is recruiting is exhausting.
I mean,
recruiting is, it's so much time and effort, and it's such a huge part of it. And then that, basically what this new rule does is it makes all that work, which you would still have to do, less meaningful. Because they have more incentive to leave and take the low-hanging fruit, the instant gratification.
Because I don't even know how to fill me up with this Patrick Swayze, Doug.
You want some ghost?
Yeah, give me some ghost. Give me some Potter Wheels. Potter
Let
wheels,
me give you some ghost,
give
man.
Give me some of that. Because I'm not even totally sure what I think of the new redshirt rules of like four-game red. I'm not even totally sure what I think of that. I mean, I don't know. Times are a-changing, you know?
They are a-changing, that's for sure.
I used to be with it, and then they changed what it was. Now what's it?
I used to be with it, then they changed what it was.
All right, check that off the list. Now we're going to get deep. Now we're going to get into that soul of yours here.
Oh, don't hurt me.
Biggest sports regret or thing you wish you could do over? And this could be broad. By thing, I'm not saying you would say like the whole 2007 season over again. But like, is there something in your career that you go back to all the time?
That's tough. What's hard is a lot of mine revolve around like getting injured.
Yeah, I was going to say, my guess for you would have been like the Patriots stuff.
Yeah, I mean, not just that. I mean, I look back to...
You were hurt. Yeah,
I look back, I broke my arm 3 different times. And then I got hurt going into the Patriots camps. And then I got hurt in camp. And then I got hurt in preseason. Like, injuries at all the wrong times. But it's kind of weird. I don't know how you regret injuries other than they just happen, right? If you could have, I think you just wish you could have known in your life, hey, in college, if I don't break my arm badly or I don't, you know what I mean? Like in high school, if I don't break my arm, like if those things don't happen, what is it like to have like a healthy career?
Yeah. Almost? I mean, because I would say that, like, like for me, like when I broke dislocated my shoulder and you know, if that doesn't happen, because I honestly, in a weird way, that's why I'm always amazed when people dismiss even tiny little injuries. I'm like, I truly don't think I ever was the same. I don't think I ever was the same after I dislocated my shoulder.
You'd never been hurt up to that point, I don't think. And you could run for days. Like you used to be weird shape.
I could run for forever. For forever.
And I think it's sometimes getting injured and people that have, you know, played sports at a higher level and then they got that first injury. There's always that moment where you realize when you come back from the injury, you have to think about things actually.
Yeah.
Where before that injury point, you never really had to think about it maybe as intentionally. You just were doing.
Yes.
You were in the flow and you're doing. This is what I always do. You've built it up to there your whole life. And then you get hurt and you have to all of a sudden rebuild and reteach and you realize that how much harder it is to do that when you've never done that before.
Yes.
And then
what I called it, like, you know, to me, you know how they say, I don't know, I think they say this, like for tightrope walkers, don't look down.
Yeah.
To me, getting hurt is the sports equivalent of looking down. All of a sudden you're like, whoa. Like you realize how fragile this is and how like you're going. That's what, like what you're saying is why I give, like, I'm always a little sympathetic towards someone like Adrian Martinez. Where it's like this guy has all of a sudden over the course of the last like 3-4 years like gotten hurt a lot. You know, his shoulder and then his knee in his very first college game. And like there's just like I think all that stuff like chips away at your ability to just go.
And the better the competition, the higher you go up in levels, the more that stuff makes a difference. Like the more, you know, like you get hurt and you're trying to reteach yourself, but yet you're going against elite people, you know, it gets really, really hard.
Yeah, I would say beyond like, beyond the injury thing or beyond, like, I always play the what if game if I would have went to Ohio to play basketball because they were telling me I would have been like, Ohio told me I was going to start
well,
and they were going to like,
you get
be the
20,
man.
You get 20 shots a game.
Yeah, they were
right?
like, they were like, you're going to come in and start and be the man. And so I always wonder, like, hey, what would that have been like? But I'm more going to go into like, I'm staying on my path. I'm not going to deviate. Like, my path is my path, but within my path, I could have done things different. So I wish the one thing I my junior year at Creighton, I fought my role.
Yeah.
I didn't, even though you're never going to win. Like, what I want to tell players is, like, you're never going to win. Like, if you, whatever role you think you should have, and if the coach doesn't see that, you're not winning that battle.
Yeah.
And the other thing I always want to tell players is, like, you got to graduate from your, from the current role to a better role. Like, you don't just get to be like, I don't want to be the eighth man. I want to be the starter. And the coach is going to be like, oh, okay, well, why don't you go ahead and get a start? Like, you got to be like the eighth man, and then you're the sixth man, and then you're
you
the
do
starter.
The eighth, like, man so well that you become the seventh. And then all of a sudden you're the best sixth man, and you're embracing that.
That's exactly
to the
right.
point where he trusts you.
That's exactly right.
And then he promotes you to a starter because you've proven that, like, you've you can exceed somewhere.
That's exactly right. So I would say the first thing is, my junior year, I fought my role. I fought being I was a starter at the start of the season. Then I got taken on the starting lineup. And then I was a sixth man for a little bit. And then I kind of was like our seventh or eighth man. And Coach Altman kind of wanted me to be like a tough guy, dive on the, like, all that stuff. And I was like, man, I'm a scorer. Like, I'm going to score, you know? Yeah. And like, you know, like, no, I want to do what Funk does, you know? Like, and it just doesn't work like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so by fighting my role, I fucked myself up that year. Like, yeah. I really did. Like, I got myself kind of in Coach Altman's doghouse. I just never, you know what I mean? Like, so that would be one. And then I'm curious what you, like, do you ever worry about, do you ever think we partied too much? We weren't crazy. We're not like on the spectrum of like guys that partied a lot and went out all the time. We were actually like not that crazy. But do you ever think we partied too much?
Oh, so well, you didn't. And actually in high school, you were better. Like,
no, in high school, I didn't party.
In high school, we had a great time. And
I didn't do that. Yeah,
you were better than us. We had a great time in high school. In college, we were, you know, yeah, I mean, post game on a Saturday. Oh, I mean, you better believe. We
I guess
were
I just
fun.
Think about like, and it's hard to view this through the lens of like a 35-year-old like adult now of like how you used to do like. But sometimes I'm like, God damn, I, like you
the
know,
nutrition.
I don't know how,
Nick, I'm just saying the nutrition.
I guess that's
is that what you're getting at? Because I think
the
nutrition
what I'm
part
at is like I, my other regret is that I wish I'd have taken care of myself
or
better
yeah.
in college. I would have ate better, gotten more consistent sleep, not partied quite as much, all that kind of stuff.
All you
I'm
had to
like,
do is party like a little bit less, and that makes a big difference.
Yes.
But more, I mean, for me, like I never compromised by like, I'm going out the night before a game. Like I didn't
oh,
do
I didn't
that.
Do that. No, I didn't do that either. But and again, like I don't want to paint this picture like you and I were like crazy, but like.
But that was still part of our lives.
That was still
right?
part, I mean, you're in college, you know, like, I mean, that's a part
I
of the deal.
I do not regret doing it because college should be fun. But I do regret the like, nutrition part of it. Like now people understand like it's a huge part of like your recovery and.
Well, and sleep, just like consistent sleep patterns.
Don't stay up till 2 and sleep. You know, like we used to sleep a little bit, but then you go take like a 4-hour nap.
Yeah, you'd have like 4 different like, or you try to have like 2 different like 3-hour sleeps. You know, you're like. Sleep from 2 to 7, then try to sleep from noon to 3. Like that's just like that's bad for you, you know. Yeah. And so I guess those are the two things I wrote down. It's like I fought my role, and then just not. I shouldn't have said prime. Just like I wish I would have done a better job of taking care of myself.
I think me and you had the one summer where we were awesome going into our senior years.
Yes, we got on it. We were drinking Myoplex,
100 push-ups, like, 100 sips. Yeah. Before bed, no matter what. On top of everything else you did every single night for a whole year.
A whole year.
We did that.
Yes.
I'm proud of that.
So am I. And I think of that sometimes like, why didn't I do that? Because I mean, I got down to 5% body fat and was just like, I was a machine, you know? And I'm like, why didn't I do this like the whole time?
Because we just
that's a part of it, I guess.
You just don't know better, right?
Yeah, you don't know better.
We worked really, like, here's the thing is you work really hard, but you don't know. Until you know when you're like 10 years, 15 years older, like, oh, but you could have been this much smarter in these areas.
That's
what you don't
that's
know.
And that's life. You look back on everything and you know, I should have done this, should have done that.
So there's regrets, but there's really like there's no regrets that were are so obvious that you go.
No, yeah, like I don't
know. You didn't know what you didn't know.
Absolutely. Okay, cross that one off the list. If you could pick any former Husker in the history of Nebraska football to transport and put them on this Nebraska football team for this individual upcoming season, who would it be?
I'm going
topping out with the obvious.
I've got two guys. One of them, neither of them actually play the positions that we.
That's the thing is like, do we need to think about positions of need or just ballers?
So let's start with the players we think would make the biggest difference, even without position. I'm taking two defensive guys.
Sue
and Grant Wistrom are the two that came to my head. Yet here's the problem. We run a 3-4 and there, and Sue's a 4-3 tackle and so Wistrom's a 4-3 end. He's not really, but like if you said pick somebody, I still think I probably pick them.
I think I'd still pick Sue.
I think I probably take Sue first, Wistrom second.
Sue's 2009 season.
Oh man, he changed everything.
Was just stupid. Like it was Chase Young, but like even probably more ridiculous.
It was more ridiculous.
So think about the season we just saw with Chase Young. And it was like more like, oh my God.
Now but look at this. Johnny Rogers, Mike Rozier, Lawrence Phillips.
That's LP, Eric Crouch.
Crouch, or let's think of an outside like a Trev Alberts or a Broderick Thomas or one of the Neil Smith, like one of those guys. Is there a defensive guy that we're not looking at? Because it's basically to me, it's a defensive lineman, pass rusher, running back, receiver, like a Johnny Rogers wouldn't hurt. Or I mean, you think of like one of these great offensive linemen we've had throughout the years.
Yeah.
There's a lot of choices, but to me, the most obvious should probably fall on the defensive line. What would help the most?
Like, I just go towards, you want to be original and think of like, I'd actually choose
Clester Johnson.
I actually choose Chevin Wiggins, and here's why. Like, no, all the roads lead back to Sue, to me. Because ultimately, that's a position Nebraska needs help. He's the best interior D lineman. Yeah,
you can put him on the nose or the end and he'd be fine.
What offensive guy would you choose? If you had to choose an offensive guy, would you choose Johnny?
Mike Rozier wouldn't be bad either.
No. What about what wide receiver?
The only reason I wouldn't say Johnny is because we have Wandale.
That's something like Johnny. It's a little Wandale's a not. I mean, he's not as good as Johnny, but he's a version of Johnny.
Yeah, he's a small because Johnny's not a bigger. Johnny's a wing back.
Would you choose Rich Baugh?
Rich Baugh maybe over Johnny Rogers. People
sleep on Rich Baugh and Tom Rude.
People sleep on that.
I'm gonna choose Rich Baugh. You choose Tom Rude.
There'll be some toughness. There'll be some.
There'll be taxes done for the entire team by Rich Baugh.
There'll be taxes done. There'll be plenty of
RC Cola.
RC Cola from Tom Rude.
Would you choose
Sue or Wistrom? I think
offensive though. Offensive.
Offensive. I mean,
I think I'd choose. See, the problem with like Eric Crouch or T. Frage is like.
That's not their offense.
They need someone that can throw the ball.
Yeah, they're not running the power option right now, so I would not choose them.
I think I'd maybe choose like LP.
Over Mike Rozier? The problem is we hadn't seen Mike Rozier like we saw LP. I think Mike Rozier may have been, I mean, he won the Heisman Trophy.
Yeah.
LP was dang good though. One of those two. I'd say LP
I would choose a running back.
Yeah.
I would choose one of Rozier, LP, I mean, even Amir.
Amir Buckhalter. I mean, those two were both
or
really
Amon
good.
Green. Like, oof. Probably Rozier. I think we'd choose Rozier.
Rozier is the Heisman Trophy winner.
So
I think
you got to go Rozier, and then I'd choose Sue on D.
Yeah. Those two would be a good team. Overnight, we'd be a good team.
Or you know what's crazy? You could choose like Alex Henry and you instantly have like...
You win two more games. If you give us Alex Henry, Sue, and Mike Rozier last year, we're nine and three. Easily. I have no doubt we're 9-3.
Oh, I don't... With Sue?
With Sue, Rozier, and Alex Henry, do we lose two games?
I would think they would have like won the West.
I think they do win the West.
I mean, I don't know. Am I crazy?
You just hand the ball to Rozier every other play, and then you're good.
And like you get inside like the 40. You get inside the 35.
Henry,
go kick a field goal.
Make a field goal once.
Make an extra point. Said we had
Lieutenant Kicker.
We had Lieutenant Kicker out there. Okay, cross that one off the list. This is good. Only a couple more here. How long are we here? We're at 50 minutes. Okay, this is good. We're trending well. You're interesting. The beauty of having you on the pod is like people get to know me a little bit better because you get to shed light on who I really am as a person, which is a ridiculous person. I'm easily influenced. It doesn't take much to influence me.
I love it.
I don't know if I wrote this question down because I don't know if I know for sure what your answer would be. Which athlete, because I thought about this because Kobe Bryant, like, and how much he influenced me, but like, is there a pro athlete that you feel like, man, that guy influenced me a ton? Even from the standpoint of like, even when you played, you would try to be like Larry Bird at times on the basketball court.
Yeah. So two guys in my basketball life that I always admired the most were affected the most with Larry Bird and Pistol Pete. Those two, I loved those two guys. Pistol Pete, you know, he could spin the ball on his finger. So I would practice.
Oh, yeah.
And I would spin
the
ball.
Did you see the movie,
The Pistol? The Pistol, yeah. It's great. And he would spin the ball on his finger for an hour. He won the bet. He could spin the ball on his finger for an hour. And he walked out and he threw it up, bonked it off his head. And it's like that affected me a lot.
Yes.
And so I was always, I loved guys that had just the sense, they had the extra sense or whatever. And Larry Bird was just had that extra sense for passing and making the play.
For people who didn't know, once a game for 4 or 5 years, there would be like one play where you'd kind of like get a rebound and just go. And it was like, oh boy.
Something's happening.
Here comes Borud thinking he's like Larry Bird. And you would try some like crazy pass. Sometimes it was like, wow, dime. And sometimes it's like, Bo, you're not Larry Bird.
It's very true.
But what football player?
I'm going to say this because before I came over here today, I was watching the NFL Network, and they had the Football Life Jim Brown.
Okay.
And so I wore the number 32.
For Jim Brown?
For Jim Brown my whole life.
Did you really?
You didn't know that, did you?
I don't think so.
So in midgets and in high school, I wore 32 because Jim Brown was my favorite player, probably.
That's so funny.
And it's kind of an odd one because he's old enough. It's not really as...
Total NFL Films thing, though.
It's an NFL Films thing. I had these NFL Films videos that I would watch religiously. It was Walter Payton running the hill. So I loved Walter Payton for his like work ethic. But the guy who I still think is maybe the best football player to ever live is Jim Brown. And he wore 32. And I don't know.
Did you run like Jim Brown, though? Because I feel like you ran more like Barry Sanders.
No, I didn't run like Barry Sanders because he was built too different. He was too jitterbug.
You were pretty.
Like, Jim Brown.
Football, you were pretty like.
Jim. What I liked about Jim Brown was he was a bigger guy that just, he could run through you, but he could run around you. And he had a great feel. So I wouldn't compare myself to Jim Brown because Jim Brown.
I would try to play like certain guys.
I mean, I would try to, but you got to be somewhat of who you were. But Jim Brown was a guy I would absolutely emulate in a sense. I would try to emulate. I mean, but I wore 32 because of Jim Brown. So Jim Brown in terms of football,
and then Larry Pistol basketball.
Yeah, and then I didn't play like Butkus, but I mean I wore 50 when I got the chance to get 51. I snagged that up quick. You're gonna play linebacker at Nebraska, and
how did that work? So you had a choice. How did that take? Tell me that story.
So you come into camp and they say, you know,
Rude. What number you want?
There's, I don't know, there's 20 scholarship guys, and there's, they say, all right, you guys pick numbers, and
that's intense.
And I got, I mean, I got up there, and I was like, I looked through the numbers, and I saw 51 was open, and I was like, oh, I'm playing linebacker, 51. You know, these guys, they want, no, give me number one, man. Like, you pick one.
You gotta, you're anti-number one linebacker?
Well.
Oh, that's funny.
One is usually for the cockiest guy in the team, usually. Right? Are you the cockiest
that's
guy?
That's the greatest theory I've ever heard in my life.
Right? But
how many teams could you go, your number one
is the cockiest guy?
Is Wandale number one?
He might deserve it. He might.
I think Wandale might be.
Wandale is number one.
Yeah. So that kind of works. Your theory holds up. One is reserved for it's Wandale.
So, I mean, I'm not saying Wandale's cocky, but Wandale thinks he's the best player in the team. He probably is. No, but Nick, he probably is the best player in the team.
Oh, my God. Is that good? No, I know, but I think
you either are
theory.
Or you think you are.
That's a great theory.
If you're wearing number one.
That's a really good theory.
But I wore 50. I've worn 32 and 51 in my life. Those are my two numbers. One was for Jim Brown. One was for Dick Butkus. That's how I think. That's how my mind works.
Okay, that's good. I mean, I had a whole bunch. I mean, Kobe, Jordan. I wore 34 for Ray Allen with the Bucks. And
was that Ray Allen?
Out of love for John Bowling. John Bowling was a Southeast Knight. I love me some Johnny Business.
I always thought you wore 21 for Lawrence Moten.
Lawrence Moten, Poetry and Moten. That was what I wore for. That's, I mean, at Kansas. I mean, right there.
That's what I mean.
21.
I always think
poetry
21.
And Moten, Lawrence Moten.
Syracuse.
Like, could there be a guy that less like me than Lawrence Moten?
If you even, I bet you most people that aren't 35 or above don't know who Lawrence Moten
is. Well, Marcus Howard, Marquette star, just set, he just broke. Lawrence Moten was the all-time leading scorer in Big East history, and Marcus Howard just broke his record. So Lawrence Moten was at Marquette to, like, congratulate. I wanted to be like, we need to be giving Lawrence Moten.
But see, nobody talks about Lawrence Moten anymore.
Lawrence Moten was a baller.
I barely remember him other than.
He had high socks.
Yeah, I remember the high socks. That was the era. Oh, the high socks.
High socks. It was legit. But.
Okay, and then, so let's take that back because the numbers make a difference. You wore 34.
Ray Allen was a big part of that.
Ray Allen,
and then also,
but you never
been before.
You wore 23. You've worn 23 before.
Maybe like at
no. You wore 24.
I wore 24 for my dad.
That's it. You wore 24
for Rich Baugh. Shouts out to Richie Baugh.
That's funny Fremont that you Flyer. Didn't wear.
I should have worn 24. That's my. Let me go back. Biggest sports regret: not sticking with 24.
24. You should have stuck with.
I should have stuck with. It's my dad, man.
Did Southeast have that option though?
Good question.
I don't think they did. I had, because I wanted to wear 33 for Bird for basketball,
I
wore 32, 33 home away.
I don't remember anyone wearing 24 with the Nukes. I think Corey Adams, RIP, wore 24 for the old unis.
Yep.
I don't think anybody had, I don't think 24 was an option.
I don't remember.
But.
I remember you mostly as 24, actually, now that I
that's
think.
Colony Heat. That's Heat. That's growing up. But then 34, I also, but I can't remember, this might have been just coincidence. Travis Diener was a point guard for Marquette that wore 34, white boy that was a baller that I was like, 34, white guard, this is great. But, and then 7 was the Scott Frost, Eric Crouch.
Yeah, and Elway, it was coming out of the Elway era.
But the problem is, my number was for Frost and Crouch, but I tried to play like Tom Brady.
Yeah. You were on to Brady in early 2000s. Like, that was your guy.
My whole
before thought. He was like
before, like I will star. Say, this, before he was a super duper star, my whole thought was like, your mannerisms and swag and presence on the football field needs to be Tom Brady. That was my whole thought.
It was actually a very good thought because you weren't overly fast and explosive, right? You weren't like jitter quick.
I wasn't.
And you weren't strong. Like, and Brady's not.
No,
strong, but he's just it's fundamentals. It's just it's
Tom
mental.
Brady was
it's leadership.
Initially, like a game, like not a game manager.
Yes,
but like,
he was. That's
he
what
was
he
kind
was.
Of.
No, that's
and
what
I felt
he
like
was.
My role at Southeast when I firstly officially got the starting job as a sophomore was like just manage everything.
Yep.
So my whole thought was just T Braid it, you know, just swag. I had the towel hanging out the back, all that stuff. But yeah, it's funny. I mean, then I had a bunch, like Kirk Heinrich was a huge influence on my game. J.J. Redick was a big influence. Jason Williams at Duke, still like, people don't, like he got in his accident and people have forgotten. Like that guy was.
He was the best player by a mile.
I mean, he was the best player in the country by a mile. That guy was a huge influence as well. But there you go. That's I think I knew the Jim Brown thing, but I always felt like early on, you were like, you were a flashy runner early on in your life as a running back. So I always thought you were a little Barry Sanders-ish in that regard.
Well, I love Barry Sanders, but.
Okay, cross that off the list. Couple more here. I can't believe we're going to go back down this path. If you had to like sum it up into like a succinct thought, you can't cop out and be like, you know, it's a combination of things if we're being honest. The single biggest reason Nebraska football fell off and is where it's at today is what?
Firing Frank Solich, period.
Right?
Period.
I mean, I don't know how that's really even debatable. We kind of got in this under one of the recap pods one time, but like, and then to expand off that is like, it deviated from what?
The continuity that we had.
The what was the blueprint of what made Nebraska successful. In some ways, it's maddening. In some ways, it's truthfully maddening that like from 1970 to 2003 or four, Nebraska was the best college football program, like, period. And it had, like, a clear-cut way of doing things. And then it just decided, like, let's just stop doing that.
We're trying to get, fix everything right now to get to someday win 9 games again. And we fired a coach for winning 9 games.
Yeah.
That's where we were at then. 9 wins got you fired. And now 9 wins get you a $50 million extension.
I mean, because what I was, Frank Solich record Nebraska was like 59-17 or something like that.
Yeah, he had the 1 year, they went 7-7. They had a rough year. And then they followed up. They made some changes.
58-19.
Yeah. I mean, it was.
He went 9-4, 12-1, 10-2, 11-2, 7-7, 9-3. Fired. I mean, right now, if you could make a deal, hey, the next 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 seasons are going to be 58-19.
You pay that guy $50 million.
You would say deal.
You pay that coach $50 million for 5 years.
So, right? Like, I think at this point, it's not like firing Frank Solich and deviating from what the blueprint was that made Nebraska successful. Is there anything else? I mean,
no, because here's the part that's so obvious to me, because I was, I lived through that transition.
You were in the transition.
Was when I came in 2003, the culture, the whatever that thing is that you feel when you're there, it was good. It was hardworking toughness. The coaches were, as we felt like we had the best coaches. Like we felt like we had coaches that were getting everything out of us. And we were good things were coming. Like that's how we felt. And you know, we won 9 games. We dominate Michigan State in the bowl game, win our 10th game. Pelini, you know, and Pelini was the interim coach, but like we thought Pelini and that defensive staff was unbelievable.
Right.
And they were light years ahead of everybody else in that conference. They were crushing Big 12. Offensive coordinators in our opinion. They had a couple, I mean, we had a couple games against Vince Young and Brad Smith. They played other gourds, but other than that, like we were pretty much like we were on a path to being really good. And it's just too bad they messed it up.
Isn't it funny how you can feel that? So but are you saying then obviously by the time you could see that erode each year?
Yes.
Because I feel the same way about Creighton, the opposite. Like when I got there, I was like, ooh, this is really, like culture's really good. And by the time I was a senior, when like we had P. Allen Stinnett and a bunch of people, like I could feel it, like I could feel it slipping.
Basketball, the people you bring in, the type of players, there's so few players on a basketball team that each player is like
massive.
10, it's like 10%, right?
Yes, right.
each guy, so you bring in three bad guys, 30% of your whole organization is messed up now.
But isn't that funny? You can feel that. But yeah, I mean, you would be able to speak to it of like physically seeing it flip.
It did.
Right?
It did.
That's just it. Okay, two last ones, and then we'll wrap it up. And they're both kind of similar in nature. The first one is, I think this was, Russillo might have tweeted this out, but which professional sport could you hide the longest? And the hard part about saying you is, I don't know if I'm necessarily saying you, like you, Bo Rude, because it's like you're still in good shape and you were a professional football player. So it's like you're like, I almost want to say you, and by you, I want you to insert just like random male that is like a decent athlete.
I got to ask at least one or two questions just so I can frame this better. So the person, not me, the person going into the sport, like let's use basketball as an example.
Yeah.
If you're 5'2", you're obvious.
Right.
I'm saying though, no, are you a high school level player?
Let's say you play.
Who might be 6'8" though.
Let's say you played high school, but you're not 6'8", you're 6'1" or 6'2".
You can't hide that long then.
In basketball?
In basketball, if you're 6'1 or 6'2, it'll be hard.
So are you saying like the NBA?
You could hide longer if you are 6'8". You could make it a quarter maybe. And they'd be like, oh, this guy sucks. And then you're and then it's over. But if you're 6'1 and you look like, you know.
I can't believe you're going back. So like you think basketball. Because one of the things about basketball is it's the one sport where you're on stage and exposed the most in general.
But there's a flow to it, and you could be the guy not handling the ball and sort of just, you
but
know.
You're one of 10 guys on the floor where like looks, I mean, looks matter anyway in basketball to a certain extent. And
maybe soccer?
Yeah, you could probably
like play like left defensive, like left forward and just be like, they're not kicking it my way. So you don't have to defend anybody.
If you just were an offensive, just position, keep you finding. Could hide. I feel like I could hide for 15 minutes.
Keep getting yourself out of position to have the ball ever. Like never touch the ball. Like just always kind of wherever the ball is. Like kind of just find your way to not get near it. So I would bet this. I never played high school soccer. So that's a good example.
We gave it up with the Barons in like I went longer than you. I played indoor soccer until like 7th grade. I would hit it off the wall and run around the guy and get it on the other side.
You wore those Umbros about 3 years too long. What you did?
Let me tell you, some of the best years of my life were my indoor soccer. Indoor soccer is a great game. Continue.
Oh, it is.
But no, you.
I'm saying this. You put me out on the pitch right now.
Look at you. You're already. That's already.
That's how I blend in.
Quite the pitch we got going here.
Let's do some of this chanting, you know, some of these.
Who wants to have some tea afterwards? Tea at my place afterwards.
Let's get the hooligans together and go fight those wankers over there that will think they're better than Tottenham. Tottenham is the best.
You sound like a soccer player already to me.
So that's how I fake it. But I would just avoid everybody. I would just run around, never come near the ball.
Never talk to anyone.
Never talk to anybody. I'd get into little chippy things because they do that. And then I'd take a couple dives. You take a couple dives and you just be like, you hold your leg.
Right.
And the guy comes out and they'll spray you. And you'd be like, yeah, thank you for that spray.
Thanks. Tea at my place afterwards.
Tea at my place. Thank you for the spray.
Thanks for the spray. I'll get you back with some tea at my
place. I'll try not to be offside, so don't pull the flag on me. Don't make me offside. But I'm going to get chippy at this guy. I'm going to give him elbows here a little bit. But I'll never get near the ball. Never touch the ball.
I'm sweating. I want to see this so bad. So soccer's the answer.
I think soccer's my answer.
You know what the reality of the sport you would get spotted first would be? Hockey. You get out there and you couldn't skate.
If you can't skate,
so hockey's obviously the answer of the opposite of like, what would you get spotted immediately? Hockey.
How would you hide? Where could you hide in football? I mean, besides being the kicker.
Like you could be like a safety, like a.
Oh no!
I mean, just C21 and hope it doesn't get to you. Right, just bail on the snap. You turn and bail.
But I mean, like, but then, like, what if you had to go tackle somebody? Like,
you don't.
You do. Like, you gotta come down.
Bruh, who
they block everybody.
I played safety for years, and I ain't tackled nobody.
But you did tackle people. You just catch and fall, though. You was catch and fall.
I would corral them in the out of bounds and shove them out of bounds.
So imagine, like, you have to insert and tackle somebody. Gonna. That's called exposure. You're better off being on the pitch. Just get lots of offsides. Like, oh, he's offsides again.
Oh, see, but that's bringing attention to you.
No, that's true. Hide. Stay on sides.
You need to follow the rules. I mean, no offsides.
Follow the rules.
You need to not get any scuffles. You need to just run away from. You need to just hop around.
Yeah, just stay in the middle of the middle.
The massive humanity.
Yeah, that middle third of the field. Just go.
What's
back.
What's your plan if it gets kicked towards you? Just try and time it and kick it as far as you
ever
can.
Seen when they like they let a pass go like through their legs to their friends like on purpose like you meant to do it like ooh look at that
they'd be like this guy's sick this guy's I heard he's having a wicked tea party at his place afterwards.
Tea time later is great
tea party at my place he kind of went into Mayor Quimby here. Okay, so there we go. And then last one along these same lines, I had fun with this one during the summer. Got to set this up. Major League Baseball game. 10-run lead. Let's just say it's the Royals and the Cardinals, just using two teams, okay? It's the bottom of the ninth. The Royals are up 10 runs, okay?
Yeah.
They're at home, so like they got to get three outs, they win the game. I or you have to pitch for that inning. Do the Royals win the game? So you got to get three out. You have 10. You have a 10-run cushion. All you got to do is get three outs and you win the game.
I lean towards no. I lean towards we lose. And here's I lean towards that it will be so easy to hit those balls or you can't throw a strike. One of those two things happen that it's like you're walking a lot of people and or they are just... These professional baseball players, 1 through 9 in the lineup, is just like, this is easy. Whack. Like, you can't fake, I can't throw, right? I can't throw. It's, you can't throw. And the first pitch comes and they'll look at the dugout and then the third base manager will get the sign from the manager and they'll do some swipes. Tug the ear, touch the nose, you know, like, and that means this freaking guy can't pitch, swing away. Because it will be so obvious that that's a 77 mile an hour
77,
fastball.
It's just like going to be like 57, dog.
Oh my God.
I think the biggest issue is walking people.
Even throwing a strike will
that's
be hard.
I know, that's what I'm saying. Like, I think the inability to even throw strikes is a problem.
Are you better off... underhand maybe. Lobbing it and saying tee off, hopefully you like we catch
hope
another
someone
like
gets under like
too far underneath
things, like you sit there and like I think the biggest mistake and maybe I mean I don't know anything about baseball in this regard, like I think the biggest mistake is people like it's kind of hard is it would their plan if their plan is to hit 10 solo home runs, that's not a great plan because at some point someone's gonna like kind of miss one and they're going to catch one at the warning track. Like, I think honestly the biggest issue is walking, is not throwing strikes and walking people.
I think the plan should be take a playbook from the movie Rookie of the Year where Henry Rohngardner re-injured his arm and he had three outs to go and he used the hidden ball trick.
That's we need to get gimmicky.
Like gimmicks like that, and then his last one was he literally like a softball lofted it, and the guy whiffed it.
I almost wonder if would you have a better chance of like, no, this is stupid. Like a bad throw to first, trying to get a guy from leading off, and hope you can like the infielders can like get a guy out.
No, I think your best play is lobbing it and hoping they. Try to tee off.
The best
because even that throw to first, like you don't throw it with zip. You don't like, you'll never get that guy out.
Gun to my head, I think we lose.
I think we lose. Because good pitchers can give up 10 runs in any, and like this would be the worst pitchers in the history of baseball.
It'd be so bad. The beauty of it would be, like, I'd want it to position it like, the Cardinals don't know. They think, like, here's Root. He got called up from the minors. You heard he's got a decent chance. Like, you look.
Just look intense. Look intense. Spit a lot.
Do the wild thing turn and all that. I mean, you.
I'd be working the ball a lot. You know, when they grip it, I'd rosin bag and I'd really twist and work that ball.
I'd call a lot of meetings at the mound.
I'd shake off a few pitches because that's what you need to do.
Yes.
You need to look like you know what you want, and you're going to throw your 72 mile an hour only throw.
I think you're giving yourself a lot of credit thinking you're going to throw 72.
Is that not? I thought that's terrible.
I mean, I think if we're trying to be like Bo, you think you're just trying to like hit the strike zone. Oh. I think that bitch is gonna be like 56.
I have no idea.
It's gonna be slow.
So it's an L.
Oh, we're losing.
All right, so I'm glad we figured that out. I'm glad we got that figured out. We get on the soccer field.
We're going on the soccer field.
Hockey, we don't survive. Baseball, we would get exposed.
You need to be in a team sport where there's a flow to it and that
there's just no hide. I mean, the problem with like, it's not like in basketball, the clock just runs out. Like in baseball, you have to get three outs. Like you just, you know,
baseball's like, hard to hide.
It's hard to hide and you got it. Like you got to get three outs. Like football and basketball, like you just run out of time.
You know, the one thing with baseball though, here's why baseball would be good for hiding. Play right field and hope they don't hit it to you.
Mm-hmm.
You get up. If you strike out, if you can make your
you just
swing.
Not swing. Or just don't swing.
Or don't swing.
Just
yeah, don't swing. Baseball might be the one if you get to choose
right
your
field,
position.
Right field, and like you got a one at bat and one inning in the field.
You might make it three or four innings and they don't hit it to you. And you
just
might.
Pray they don't
you
hit
get
it
up twice
you.
Maybe in a couple
your
innings.
Your body's good enough. Like you in a baseball uniform would look like that guy.
I would check swing a few times.
I would not.
I would just
my swag, my pre-bat, like, touch the outside of the plate, inside the plate, like, McGuire, like,
it's a show.
My show would be like, this dude's motherfucking tight.
See, that's what you can do, though. You can make it a show. And then, Nick, think about that. Think about you make it look really good. You're adjusting your gloves.
And I wouldn't swing at anything. And then, you know, look at the ref like.
Yeah, you look at the ump and you go, are you serious? Then you'd blend right in.
Yeah. I think baseball, you could hide for. Just hope it doesn't get
half
hit
a game.
You. Now, if it gets hit to you,
you're in trouble.
You're big trouble.
Unless it's a base hit, then you just like catch it.
Ooh, even.
And then you Scotty Smalls run it in.
Oh, that's a perfect.
And then everybody looks at you like, there
this
he
guy
is.
Sucks at baseball, doesn't he?
There's the guy.
All right, that's good. We're at an hour and 17 minutes, my friend. You got a couple of. You got one last Patrick Swayze in you. Take it to the head, dog. Don't you spit that out.
That Swayze stuff's funny. I'm sorry.
All right. Well, that'll do it for the wine pod. God, these are fun. You know what? If our job was to do a wine pod every day, it'd be a decent job.
Bottles down. I feel great.
All right. Get home to your wife. I took way too much of your time. Go home to your wife. And everybody subscribe to the pod. Bo's going to go home to his wife. And life's going to resume normalcy right now. This was fantastic. Okay.
Love it.
I bow to you. Until the next wine pod. Swayze.
A Parkville Media production.